Group Summer School, Friday morning, 25th June 1982. And so we come to the end of our summer school this year. I hope it has been a happy time for each and every one of you, and that all of you have gained something which will be helpful and most worthwhile for you. We are apt to think in terms of beginning and ending. In actuality, there is no such thing as a beginning and an ending. What we commonly call a beginning is the result of so many other forces at play which brought about this particular beginning. And then it works itself out, and it branches off into other aspects of life and activity which we here call the ending of this particular activity. If we can become conscious in the true sense that any beginning, any period which consists of a beginning and ending is actually a continuation of one stream of life, then the sort of anticipation with which we look forward, as we say, to a beginning, and the feeling that, oh, pity it is all over, both those feelings disappear. And one is continuously alive and awake to that livingness. Now this is very, very important, especially in relation to the theme which we chose this week, the theme of death. Death has always been felt as an annihilation. But I hope that during this week we have been able to see that death is by no means an annihilation. The birth-death complex constitutes life in its wholeness, in its totality. It is life which manifests as birth, it's life which manifests as death. That is, manifests to us as we are at present with our particular mode of consciousness. If one can be attentive in the complete way, then there is no such thing as a beginning and an ending. There is one unbroken wholeness, which is holiness. And that holiness, that consciousness of holiness, and that power of that consciousness of holiness pervades all our life. So, death, which in the ordinary way is the root source of the greatest fear in our life, and from which stem all other fears, all those fears begin to wither away. And one is able not so much to accept or to reject what we experience in life, but to do our best to live through it as a continuity of life itself in its wholeness, in its totality. Which means that the individual fulfills the purpose of his existence far more effectively and usefully. Useful not only to himself, but to his whole environment. And this is very important. It is quite natural, because that's how we are constituted, to think of ourselves as separate individual beings. It is a practical convenience, if you like, to regard ourselves as separate individual beings. If we didn't have that aspect in our consciousness, we would never be awake to our personal responsibility to all those who are around us, to our environment, and also to ourselves. So we must have a certain element of that distinctive self-consciousness. But the isolativeness and the separativeness which is associated with that consciousness is what we have to get free of. And we get free of it by being quite awake to the environment and by trying to give the whole of ourselves to what is present here and now. And the giving of the whole of oneself is the real meaning of renunciation, of relinquishment, neither of which are any loss, nor are they a gain. Because if we regard them as a gain for ourselves, that regarding anything as a gain for oneself introduces the element of separateness, of incomplete relationship. So now, this business of death, we have to see it as a portal, so to say, a gateway, from instant to instant, from a fraction of an instant to a fraction of an instant, all through our life. There can be no change which is progressive, certainly which is progressive, unless there was the death of the present situation. We have to die, therefore, to every single moment. How shall we die in the right way to every single moment? As far as I can see, there is only one way: by being totally, completely attentive to the moment. Because if one is completely and totally attentive to the moment, one is fully alive and totally healthy. So if we die healthily, then we are immediately reborn in the next moment, healthily, whole, complete. Now, this is the way of awakening to our true nature. As you know, we constantly talk of the source from which we are derived. And that source is transcendent to this temporary manifestation of that source. We are like the clothes which transcendence wears. You know what we do with our clothes. When they get worn out, we have to discard them. I don't discard them, I use them in some other way. They make good floor cloths, you see, and so forth. So that they are completely used up. And it is necessary to live completely in the moment with complete attention so that it is wholly used up and there is nothing left over, so to say, to be worked out in a future in this life. There is no such thing, for me anyway, as another life which is a continuation by someone who was Firoz Mehta in this life. Firoz Mehta absolutely disappears altogether. That which has been manifested here and now through this person has affected the environment, and in that sense there is a continuity. Also, there is a continuity after the death of this particular organism in terms of the memory which might be held by some people in the world, and in terms also of a material record in terms of what one may have built or written or some artistic product or some philosophical or scientific contribution which that person may have made. And so that person lives in the future in that sense. But the particular entity which knows itself as I am I, that particular I am I absolutely disappears. Consider, when we go to sleep and are sound asleep, where is this I am I? This I am I is present only when the body is awake. It is also present in dreams. But that dream activity is an activity of the brain which goes on and is partly awake to the I am I consciousness. Therefore, in our dream, I saw this, I heard that, I did this, and this is what happened. You watch your dreams carefully. There is no absence of the I in any dream, is there? It's an extraordinary fact, isn't it? So this I am I holds good only in the dream state and in the physically waking state. Now, when we wake up after our dreams, once again the brain reimposes the I am I concept. And therefore we remember ourselves, as we say, as we could say. We remember that we are we. Of course, in cases of severe amnesia of some sort, a person just doesn't know who he is. But those are exceptionally ill situations. In the ordinary way, we all know just who we are. When I wake up, I am perfectly conscious that I'm not the Prince of Wales or something like that. You see, but I am just this thing. Now, in profound slumber, the brain cannot impose the I am I awareness upon its inner consciousness, upon inner consciousness. It cannot do it. Now, that I am I consciousness reawakes only so long as the apparatus, this psychophysical organism, is alive. And when it wakes up, it is alive, and therefore the I am I consciousness starts up again. But it is totally dependent upon the psychophysical organism. The I am I consciousness begins after we are born, usually several months after we are born. The little infant becomes aware of its individual separate existence, separate from mom and dad and friends and all the rest of it, months after it is born. Not till the external world has conditioned that child brain to see its own individuality as being separate from other individualities, does the I am I consciousness rise up. And since the I am I consciousness is wholly dependent upon the apparatus, the psychophysical organism which it embodies, therefore, and if it disappears in profound slumber but remembers itself again after waking up, how much more would that I am I disappear when the apparatus dies? When the apparatus has disappeared, the I am I consciousness is absolutely obliterated. And you know, modern physiologists and others have gone into this matter quite deeply and discovered many things. The brain and nervous system, the glands, and the very cells of the body bear the record, the memory of our whole life process as such. When the body completely disintegrates, either through burial and much more swiftly through cremation, when that happens, the total record in the brain and the nervous system is altogether obliterated. That record doesn't sort of float about in some mysterious subtle matter or forces floating about in the air. You have to examine this matter very, very carefully. Once you are able to examine this really, you will be free of the tyranny of the I am I consciousness. And the tyranny comes simply because this I am I consciousness clings to itself and wants itself perpetuated. You see? And it is this I am I consciousness, this isolative, separative I am I consciousness, which is the root of our incomplete relationship with anybody and everything. So, if we can once be able to see quite clearly, not merely logically, but with our inner consciousness, with our inner vision, see that this organism completely disappears, then you will find a remarkable freedom in so many ways in your life. This is how it has happened to me myself. So I'm only saying what is my own actual experience. All sorts of anxieties, fears about the future, all that absolutely disappears. We know how most people feel that they would like to meet their loved ones on the other side. All right. But if there is another side in which this identifiable entity, myself, is present, and identifiable entities who are my loved ones and friends are also present, so too are my enemies. So too are all those who can hurt me, destroy me, and so forth. We can't say no to them. We all imagine heaven, at least all the theistic religions present heaven as the wonderful place of happiness, and you'll meet with your loved ones in fellowship with the Lord and all that sort of thing. It's a very nice concept, but it's merely a pleasant concept. If we are going to meet those whom here we recognize as friends, the Lord may think that our enemies and the people who hurt us were the really good chaps and we were not so very good. What then? They will have the stalls where we'll have the gallery seats. Isn't that so? If you let the brain be quiet and first of all, think it out. Study the matter carefully. And see that the psychophysical organism, which is the apparatus of the I am I separative consciousness, is completely destroyed. All memory, all I am I consciousness disappears forever. The identifiable entity is not permanent. Every entity comes into being, goes through its lifespan, and then it dies. It dies completely as an entity. This is the great flaw in theistic theologies, where they present the supreme being, God, as the other. And especially in Catholic theologies, God is the holy other. The creator is the holy other than the created. There's only a spark of that holy other in the created. But now consider this. The holy other, the transcendent, is the totality. He is granted infinity, eternity, absolute bliss and so forth right throughout. Can you take hold of infinity and sparsel it up in bits? You see, even ordinary intellectual perception will show that that is a limited concept. You can't parcel up. Well, as I put in that article in the Middle Way, you can no more appropriate a little bits of infinity and eternity for yourself than you can cut off slabs of space and screw your nameplates upon them. You can't do it. You see? So one has to bear this sort of thing in mind. And this deity, who is presented as a wholly other, is as an entity, an immortal entity. That again is a hopelessly illogical statement. An entity begins, proceeds, dies. But God never began. He is the self-subsisting, absolute all from in eternity. And if you use the word eternity, you can't talk of a beginning. Beginning implies time. Time and space come into being, come into existence with the Big Bang. You see, we, who are the products of this tremendously long evolutionary process, which has gone on for about 20,000 million years, as the scientists say. The Hindus postulate 300, in modern terminology, which is the American and continental, I prefer the English terminology, otherwise you get too many aliens to talk about. The Hindus stated 311 trillions and 40 billion years. But these are just postulates, imaginary figures. The scientific figures have a little more basis in calculation, which is grounded in observation and experiment and so forth. So they are perhaps a little more reliable, up to a point anyway. Those figures will also change. 20,000 million years it has taken to produce us. And we have been on the globe only 3 or 4 million years. You see? So now, death is nothing to be feared in actuality. It causes us grief when those who are near to us and close to us die. Do we experience grief if and when an enemy dies? What did we experience when we heard the news of Hitler's death? I remember exactly what I felt. So you see, this grief is something which is self-centered. We grieve for ourselves. I have lost something. And like a baby which has lost its toy and cries because it has lost its toy, we too cry because we have lost something. Of course, the logical intellectual argument doesn't assuage grief. Grief is felt. And there is a very sound basis for the feeling of that grief. Although consciously we are aware in terms of separateness, that's the other fellow, this is so and so, this is so and so, and this is me. Although we are conscious in that sense, generally, throughout our lives, at least the bulk of humanity is like that, there is a certain underlying consciousness of the totality, of the one total reality. And perhaps It is that consciousness which receives a shock which it cannot deal with. So the organism weeps. Some of us weep rather easily because we are very sensitive to these things. But this sort of hypersensitivity really means that I am very self-considering. I have been hurt. That which I wanted to be here is no longer here. I know these are very deep things, and they are very sensitive points with human beings. But we have, if we are going to fulfill the purpose of our existence on this planet, even to a minimal degree, it is our duty to look into things as deeply as we possibly can and become free of all our conditioning and limitations and so forth. So look into it. Death has been regarded by some with great perception as these are theists, as God's greatest gift to man. It is the rest in the real sense of the word. You know, R.I.P., rest in peace. But that peace is an absolute peace. Now, we can bring that peace which inevitably befalls every single living creature, human or animal or whichever it is, that peace, if we are intelligent, can be brought into our lives here and now. If we can see deeply enough and truly enough and bring that peace here and now, then instead of grieving for the loss which we have sustained, we will be able to be completely compassionate and understanding, and therefore a power for healing, for benediction, and for comfort in the true sense to anybody else and everybody else. You know what the word comfort means. Com, fors, fortis. Fortis is the genitive case. With strength. Comfort is strength. And strength is complete resilience. The strength which fights, which oppresses, will die, inevitably die. But the strength which is complete resilience is unkillable. Look at the atmosphere, for instance. Can you draw your sword or draw your pistol and destroy the atmosphere, or shoot it and destroy it? You can't. It is completely resilient, isn't it? Unresisting. Now, if we can understand death in that deep sense and bring that peace here and now, so many of the difficulties in our life will just disappear. And certainly, so many unnecessary anxieties and so much sorrow in life. You can't sorrow for that which is truly live, alive, healthy, whole, holy. There is no sorrow associated with that. There is sorrow associated with the broken up, with the breaking up of the wholeness, with our separative self-consciousness. And if one understands death, the death of the organism in its real sense, then all that difficulty will disappear altogether. So now, you will go out, we will all go out into the old world again. After all, an experience like this is like being in a new world for the time being. whatever of peace, of happiness, of insight has emerged in you, in your own inner consciousness, take that with you and keep it. Be silent about this treasure. Because if you are not silent, somebody will try to steal part of that treasure. Meaning will be a source of disturbance to you. But if you are silent and quiet, it will remain with you and inspire your life in the days to come. I hope I will be able to be present at future summer school and future summer schools. I do this work because every one of you is really dear to me, not in the sentimental sense of attachment, but dear in the sense that I value the embodied transcendence in each and every one of you. And as you know, I have tried to carry on with the groups somewhat in the spirit and in the manner in which such sort of groups existed in ancient days in India, in China, in Iran, and such places. So I wish you all peace and strength, good health and happiness for all your days. And thank you very much indeed for your presence here and all that you have contributed with your presence. Bless you all.